guess what day it is.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Hawks game four tomorrow night. I'm guaranteeing they're going to even it at two.
Josh, they score! It's a power play goal. It's 2-1 Hawks.
I am the smartest man alive.
A bad giveaway at the Hawk line. 4-2 St. Louis.
Uh-oh.
He sidesteps the blue and fires. He scores! That deflects through the air and over the head of Brian Elliott. And the Hawks are back to within a goal of the Blues.
This is 4-3. What you wanted. You needed one.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
Yeah! Blues win this one. The Blackhawks are up against the wall. Elimination opportunity coming up for the St. Louis Blues two nights from now.
Hawks game four tomorrow night. I'm guaranteeing they're going to even it at two. Remind me to never guarantee anything again. Remind me never to guarantee that today is Wednesday. Idiot. Me, I'm an idiot. You know, that giveaway by Trevor Van Riemsdyk didn't help a whole lot either. Hello?
No, it didn't.
How about the other eight giveaways? You know why this is so frustrating this morning? We're not supposed to feel like this. This happens to other teams. This doesn't happen to us.
You guys just... It's fine.
No, it's not.
It's going to be fine.
Down 3-1 is not fine.
It will be fine.
It's not fine. I'm going to sit over here and pout.
You know, we're so used to watching the other team go through the handshake line at the end.
Right.
And say, good luck.
We're not going to be in the handshake line. Just relax.
Well, there will be a handshake
Everybody's
line.
Everybody's in the handshake line.
Well, we won't be on the losing end of the handshake line. How about that?
Hawks need to win two in St. Louis, one in St. Louis, one here, and then one more in St. Louis.
Right.
In games 5, 6, and 7. There is nothing about last night's game that would make you go, done. But
right.
This team has done it again and again and again and again. And who would you rather be down 3-1 than the three-time Stanley Cup champions?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
That's the good news. The bad news is somewhere in the madhouse on Madison, the boys lost their minds last night. And I get that the Corey Crawford goalie fight was entertaining and that it could have lit up the team and started them anew. Well, it didn't. I would argue that it took him out of his game. He missed a goal that he should have stopped. He probably stops it 7 out of 10 times. The game-tying goal that made it 2-2. There were a couple of quickies in the third. Somehow the power play has become a problem with the penalty kill. Can't stop anything. And the fights that the Blues essentially started in the second spill over to the third. And the Hawks end up living in the penalty box, not being able to kill the penalties. And also Andrew Shaw loses his mind at the end of the game. It all comes down to a 4-3 loss and a 3-1 deficit.
The penalty kill had been so good.
Yeah.
Earlier in the series, throughout the last, I don't know, couple of weeks of the regular season. And now it's struggling again, and the power play has been just not there.
Non-existent.
Yeah.
You could also make the argument that someone has stolen Patrick Kane and replaced him with a lesser talent because somehow he can't find the back of the net.
He had a breakaway last night.
Yep. Two breakaways last night. Yep. Neither one goes in. If you're Brian Elliott and you see Patrick Kane coming down on you one-on-one, you got two of those? One of them has to go by you. And neither shot was really a great shot, you know, from Patrick Kane's standpoint. You know, they were fairly easy saves for a breakaway.
Yeah.
So it's frustrating. It's very frustrating. I'm not guaranteeing anything. I'm not guaranteeing that I will be here tomorrow. I'm not guaranteeing that today is Wednesday, as I mentioned. I'm not guaranteeing anything anymore.
You guys just need to simmer down and take a deep breath. It'll be okay.
Later today, Judd Surratt will be on.
Don't you feel better now?
Yes, thank you.
I'm sure Judd will be the voice of reason.
Oh, yeah.
And what's that saying?
Oh, yeah. I'm just glad I fell asleep.
Well, here's the thing. I fell asleep. This is God's practical joke. I fell asleep during the second intermission. I woke up just in time to see the third and fourth goal scored.
Oh.
Not good.
Yelling at the TV, throwing things.
Should have turned on the Cubs game.
You know, it was kind of,
What?
I don't want to say funny, but when they were during the Crawford fight, you know, they're all in the corner pounding. Crawford's going crazy. And then they keep showing the lone St. Louis goaltender just standing there kind of watching.
Yeah, look at those guys.
Mom boys.
Yeah.
It's just interesting with the Cubs fan, you know, the St. Louis fans, how they're so mad at the Cubs games, and you know, and we're having the same feeling at the Hawks games now.
Well, again,
the same.
You can't win every year. You're not supposed to win every year. This is a very familiar position for every other team in the league. It's just not familiar to us. Not since 2010. So we will regroup and, of course, figure it out. Go to St. Louis tomorrow night and punish them for the crimes that we've committed.
Yes.
That's tomorrow night in St. Louis. What's game time tomorrow night? Another 8:30?
Another 8:30 starts, Steve. I know how much you enjoy those.
It's the best.
And we don't have a game time yet for Saturday, if there is a Saturday. Well,
There will be a Saturday.
Yeah. I'm not guaranteeing
Dave.
That.
No?
Yes. I'm not guaranteeing
Saturday.
Well,
you couldn't guarantee it was Wednesday. How can you guarantee there's going to be a Saturday?
I cannot guarantee there will be a Saturday.
Do you want me to guarantee it?
Well, you can. I mean, that's a choice you'll have to make.
Yeah, don't let Steve do it.
I'm going to guarantee it.
All right. Well,
okay, there will be a Saturday game, and we'll wait to find out the time.
How's that? We have a texter that says, Andrea, don't promise what you can't fulfill about the hockey game. I'm adding the emotion.
Okay. There's tears in the text.
Is there an emoji?
We'll have Hawks highlights.
What?
Hawks replay.
How long is the Blackhawks Express today?
0.2 seconds.
I should just read the sponsor.
Yeah.
It should be the entire thing.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I have to say to the people that know me the best, the people of New York, when they give us this kind of a vote, and it's just incredible, and I guess close to 70%, and we're going to end at a very high level.
A little less than a year later, the race for the Democratic nomination is in the home stretch, and victory is in sight.
As predicted, big night for Trump and Hillary. The Hillary thing was weird because after Trump's, is it Bernie Chance? Was Bernie Chance? After Trump won immediately, it drives me nuts, by the way. As soon as the polls close, Wolf comes on and CNN's prepared to declare a winner. What, you counted them that fast? It just happened.
That drives me crazy. Remember we asked Pat Brady about that?
Yeah.
And he said, oh, well, it's exit polling. But they get egg in their faces with the whole John Kerry. Remember?
Well, it's happened many times. It will happen again.
Yeah.
But it's frustrating to see with less than 1% of the vote counted, we're prepared to declare a winner.
Right.
Okay, Wolf. Now, they've been right the majority of the time, but it still is aggravating. I'm aggravated about everything today.
I think you are.
Lighten up, Steve.
What do you need? Okay. You know.
At 6:22, what was I talking about? Oh, easy win for Trump. Not so easy for Hillary at the outset. And then every 10 minutes, her lead got bigger because they actually were counting the precincts around the state of New York and in upstate New York. And Bernie just didn't do as well as expected. Ended up losing by 16, I think, by the end of the night.
Yeah, she crushed it.
So proportional allocation of delegates on the Democrat side means that Hillary's lead is extended. The Trumpster will win most of the 95. It's funny. You know where Trump lost? Manhattan, where he lives.
How about that? He's going to get 89 of the 95 likely.
Okay, so 89 out of 95 is good.
Yeah.
It gets him closer to 1237. It doesn't mean he's going to lock up 1237. Ted Cruz, this is my favorite story of the night. Ted Cruz lost in one, didn't lose, but he finished in one precinct behind Dr. Ben Carson.
I saw that.
I won? No, you didn't actually win, Dr. Ben. You just beat Ted Cruz. It's 6:23. Let's go through some sound from yesterday as a setup for this. You know, you got to wish that in some level, if you love this politics stuff, you were in the Senate for a day or two to understand why the Senate hates Ted Cruz the way they do. And by the way, if you think I'm exaggerating, Peter King is a Republican from New York and a well-thought-of Republican from New York. Here's what he said yesterday.
Republican Congressman Peter King of New York.
He loves him.
Congressman, congratulations on your new chairman position. Here's actually a quote from Congressman King about Ted Cruz. Any New Yorker who even thinks of voting for Ted Cruz should have their head examined.
Okay, well, this is a little turnabout.
So wait a minute. What happens tonight on the Republican side? How big does Donald Trump win,
by the way? Well, first of all, in case anybody gets confused, I am not endorsing Ted Cruz. I hate Ted Cruz. And I think I'll take cyanide if he ever got the nomination. Now, having said that,
wow.
I think you're going to see Donald Trump scoring a big victory tonight. I've not endorsed Donald Trump. In fact, I actually voted by absentee ballot for John Kasich. I'm not endorsing John, but I voted for him to really send a message. But I think Trump is going to win big. I know in Long Island, you go through every part of Long Island I've been to. People come up to you. They're talking about Donald Trump.
I hate Ted Cruz. If he were to win the nomination, I'd take cyanide.
Right.
Rudy Giuliani, whose wheels came off a while ago, he did a Q&A with CNN about endorsing Trump. Listen to this tap dance.
Doesn't make sense to me that you are going to vote for Trump, but you won't endorse him.
Okay, so I'll endorse him. I mean, you know, but I'm not part of the campaign.
But what's the difference? That's what I don't understand. Why don't you say, I'm Rudy Giuliani. I mean a lot in New York politics.
Okay, I'm Rudy
endorse Donald Trump.
Okay, I'm Rudy Giuliani. I mean a lot in New York politics. I endorse Donald Trump, but I'm not part of the campaign.
Well, I don't understand. What does that last part mean?
What does that mean is I'm not a surrogate. They haven't asked me to do anything. I'm not involved in the campaign. I'm not called upon to give advice except a few times when I've volunteered it. I'm not part of the campaign apparatus. I don't want people to think I am.
So how's that different than Mayor de Blasio saying I endorse Hillary Clinton?
I think he's part of her organization. I'm not. But I'm willing to accept. If you want to interpret that as an endorsement.
Well, you were really strict about it the last time.
I'm really. You can interpret it as an endorsement, but I'm just not part of the campaign.
What the hell does that mean? Okay, he's not officially in the campaign. He seems like he's trying to keep some
distance.
Yeah, like 1 foot in, 1 foot out kind of situation.
Well, he obviously, he said, you know, when he threw in, I'm a big deal in the Republican Party, and then is clear to say, but I'm not supporting Trump. I think that's, he just keeps backpedaling.
I don't get it. Everybody wants to be behind the guy that wins unless they don't want to be behind the guy that wins.
What?
Sean Hannity, speaking of the wheels coming off, Sean Hannity had Ted Cruz on. And Ted Cruz, this is just before Ted Cruz slipped into the night and got out of New York as fast as he could. But they had a little dust up over the whole allocation of delegates process, sounded like this.
Sean, the only people asking this question are the hardcore Donald Trump supporters.
Why do you do this every single time? You got to stop. Every time I have you on the air and I ask a legitimate question, you're trying to throw this in my face. I'm getting sick of it. I've had you on more than any other candidate on radio and TV. So if I ask you, Senator, a legitimate question to explain to the audience, why don't you just answer it?
Sean, can I answer your question without being interrupted? Donald Trump's campaign does not know how to organize on the grassroots. And so when the delegates are elected, conservative activists, real conservative activists show up and they elect delegates. And we are winning those elections over and over and over again. The Donald Trump campaign doesn't know what they're doing. They don't show up. In Washington State, when Washington State elected their delegates, 3 days before the election, the Donald Trump campaign in a panic realized Washington State was getting ready to elect their delegates. They sent out an emergency email to their Washington supporters, but they screwed up and sent it to their Washington, D.C. supporters instead of their Washington State supporters. I cannot help that the Donald Trump campaign does not seem capable of running a lemonade stand.
It's a long-winded explanation to explain how he's got better people on the ground to go and pick up delegates when they are decided after the primary election. And that's what happened in Colorado. That's what happened in or is happening in several other states. It's frankly not going to be enough to make a difference. Look, the bottom line is this. If Trump had legitimate alternative choices, even though I never, ever thought he, I'm fully willing to admit, I never thought he would get this far. I never for a moment, and by the way, nobody who does a lot of this ever thought he would get this far. So I was completely wrong. But if there were better alternatives than Ted Cruz and John Kasich, it wouldn't be this sort of runaway situation. The thing that was disturbing about yesterday's New York vote was the moderates. The moderates in New York voted for Trump 46-43, somewhere in that neighborhood. But the point being, Trump also won in that category. So for everybody that wants to write Trump off now against Hillary and say that Trump versus Hillary will be a Hillary blowout, here's two people with massive negatives. And this notion that it's going to be a huge turnout, I'd argue maybe it's going to be a low turnout for the presidential election because people will be so disgusted with that choice that they won't even show up to vote. And if it's a lower turnout, I think it tends to favor Trump anyway.
That's an interesting theory.
So if Hillary and Trump are your final two, outside of the debates, which will be very entertaining.
Oh, they're great.
Outside of the debates, I don't know that that we won't be talking about President Trump in November of 2016.
Oh, I don't know.
And my deportation in December. It's 6:29. We're back after this with the big story. Karen Conti at 6:40 this morning. You know, we got to ask Karen Conti about these bathroom laws all over the country and if any of that's coming to Illinois, amongst other legal questions. And if you have one, you can toss it in by text, and I'll see if I can get it on the air at 312-981-7200. Steve Cochran, 720 WGN.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
6:42, Karen Conti joins us. Karen Conti from the Karen Conti Law Firm, which I believe you have named the Karen Conti Law Firm?
Something like that. It's just Conti Law. That's it. Just plain and simple.
Conti Law. And as always, the P is silent. how do we get a hold of you there?
You can call me at 312-332-7800 or email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
We have several newsworthy stories that are out, and let me start with the big bathroom controversy. There was a story about a month ago, maybe a little less than that, that somebody in Springfield was pushing an Illinois gender bathroom bill. Look, nothing goes on in Springfield, so I'm sure nothing will go on with this either. But this is popping up all over the country. There's business implications, and there's obviously personal implications. And even though it's a very tiny percentage of people who are transgender and a very tiny percentage of people who are most directly impacted by this, the law is the law, and I keep hearing Title IX coming up. How does Title IX involved in this?
Well, the question is, you know, what are the rules when it comes to bathroom? If you have if you're biologically a boy, do you have to use the boy's bathroom? And actually, yesterday, the Virginia appellate court just ruled that under this Title IX, which is what dictates schools and what they have to do to comply with the law of discrimination, that court basically said that a boy, she was a girl, she identified as a boy and wanted to use the boy's bathroom, and that she could do that because sex is really defined not so much as what your biology is, but what you identify with. So it's interesting. You know, again, you're right. So few people are affected by these things. But I think these kinds of laws and these kinds of rulings are more symbolic, if you will, to kind of, identify maybe what is the purpose of the segregation and who are you as a person? Are you what your biology is or what you think you are?
Well, there's this notion in a lot of the states where the arguments have gone on that there's some sort of danger presented, which frankly is nonsense. If somebody is a transgender, it doesn't mean they're going to go into the other bathroom and suddenly attack someone. That's ridiculous. And the majority of the awkward of that moment actually falls on that person. Just use common sense. I mean, that's just all well and true. Having said that, you know, I understand why parents would have misgivings about this or have concerns about this, and I think their arguments need to be heard as well.
And I guess we're in a day and age, too, where there's unisex bathrooms all over the place now. So, you know, and I know that one of the grocery store chains, I think smartly, has a policy in their store saying, you know, this is a unisex bathroom and it's a multi-unit bathroom. And it says, you know, if you have an elderly parent and you're bringing your elderly parent or you have a disabled person, we welcome everybody in here. And everyone's going to have to just, you know, use the bathroom as accordingly. And I kind of like that idea that why are we even insisting that girls in one and boys in another. Again, no danger, I agree with you.
Well, and I've been to several restaurants recently that have nothing but unisex bathrooms. You know,
right.
They're just bathrooms, you know,
right.
And you use them as you use them. But it's interesting you brought this up because I guess I never thought about it prior to this, but just because it has a boy picture on the bathroom door or a girl picture on the bathroom door doesn't mean it's a law.
Well, right. And you know, and there is no law that says that you have to have two separate bathrooms. But there are laws that say you can't discriminate against people based upon identity. So where you fall in the middle, I guess the courts are going to be spending their time. I hate to see courts wasting their time on these kinds of issues because it seems to me there's a common sense solution.
Yeah, and unisex bathrooms be it. Now, in schools, of course, the question is cost. In schools,
right.
You know, the idea of being able to put in another bathroom, you know, in a cost is you know, it could be cost prohibitive. But there's a lot of bathrooms in any given school. So couldn't you maybe select a portion of them and make those unisex bathrooms?
Right. Common sense approach always works for me.
Thanks for coming to the Common Sense Show. All right, we'll come back. I want to talk to you about this a story that kind of got buried on the NFL concussion settlement reaffirm. And if we have time, there's a John Wayne Gacy story. That story never, ever, 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 ever goes away.
It does not.
And the Anita Hill confirmation HBO telemovie is on this week. And I had a question about that as well. And we'll check the texters, see if they need you, Karen, as well. Karen Conti, she's on Sunday nights with Brian Noonan at 8 o'clock still?
Still, 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock.
All right, 6:46. We're back after this. Karen Conti rejoins us now. All right, so Karen, the National Football League may have to pay up to $5 million per player. That's the high end of the settlement reaffirmed this week. I think I hit my own head at the United States Court of Appeals. There's a lot of legal mumbo-jumbo to the rest of us here, but basically the NFL's on the hook.
Right. What happened was there was a class action lawsuit, and it was approved by the judge, which the judge has to approve all the settlements in a class action because it affects more than just the people who are in that suit. It affects potentially other people who have not brought suit yet. And it went up on appeal, and a lot of the players were arguing this is not a fair settlement. It doesn't include enough people, and it doesn't provide enough money for people who are affected by these things. And the appellate court said, no, we're not going to hear arguments that it wasn't fair. We're just going to be here to say that it pretty much does what it should do, and we're going to affirm it. So now these players are going to be compensated if they are diagnosed with something that relates to what happened to them while playing football.
Yeah, and these are players that are pretty messed up. To receive the max payment, you have to have Alzheimer's, ALS, Parkinson's, or severe dementia, and have found to have CTE before the settlement was approved last year. So, right. This and will take care of your care and your family for the most part.
Right. And I think the real argument was that some of these things are hard to trace to what happened. And that's going to be the problem, that there are hopefully they're not going to be arguments about where did this start? Is this something that you would have had anyway? And again, $5 million sounds like a lot of money, but for people who really need day-to-day care for these kinds of ailments may not be enough. But again, it's a start, and I think that there's an acknowledgement now that these problems arise because of the sport, and hopefully that will lead to safer procedures in the future.
You know, Dave Ennett, sports director at 720 WGN and anchor at Channel 9 News and sports genius, Karen, Dave.
Hi, Karen. Yes,
yeah. Hi, Dave.
Coach Ditka has been very loud about taking care of older players, mm-hmm. players who were the foundation of the game, and the NFL not doing enough. That hasn't been mostly noise. I know he's raised money at a lot of different things for it.
The gridiron greats.
Yeah, but do we know the status of that? I mean, is he still active in it? Have they raised a bunch of money?
I think so, yeah. I think it's an ongoing thing.
Because it would seem to me that his argument has been, and I fully support him in this and think it's good, his argument has been, let's set aside a fund of these gigantic profits that we have to take care of those who came before these players who are making all the money now, and to make sure they're okay, and then you don't have to deal with lawsuits like this on this level.
Yeah, no question. I mean, I think the feeling has been, and I think this in all sports, but it's been more evident, I think, in football, that you've seen the way some former players have suffered, and they were in there before the big dollars, and so they've set up this fund to try to help them. And I don't think that effort is going to end, no matter what eventually comes of this case.
Yeah, you would hope.
I would ask Dave the question. I mean, are younger players now, if I were an agent, I would be negotiating for my younger player, even though my younger player thinks he's infallible and he's never going to be hurt. I would negotiate as part of the package some ongoing medical policy. So after the person retires, they would have ongoing medical insurance, ongoing treatment, and ongoing care for whatever injuries relate to playing football. That seems to me would be par for the course.
But I think that's all collectively bargained. I'm not sure, but I think that that's something that the Players Association has fought for. And I don't know that individual contracts would have that.
Okay.
So then the players, when they retire, are free agents in regards to their health?
Well, they're still covered by the Players Association. and whatever has been negotiated.
So the Players Association maybe could be doing a better job of taking care of players post-retirement.
Well, I mean, I think that's been one of the goals, has been to make sure that the former players are covered medically. But I don't think it's – I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think it's something that's covered individually.
Well, but I agree with Karen on this. Why not? Again,
well,
there's no shortage
try.
Of profit here.
Yeah.
Why not make a deal where, even if it's a five-year span, right. You know, 5 years after you retire, you're going to have medical care that is the best possible to make sure you're okay. After that, lose the number. Anita Hill, that's the other story that is big legal news this week, Karen. Anita Hill in this HBO docudrama confirmation goes back to the Supreme Court fight over Clarence Thomas so long ago. What do you remember of those days? Were you following that?
Well, you know what's interesting? I was in Washington for about a week during the confirmation hearings. In fact, the time that my partner and I argued before the Supreme Court, it was only a court of eight because Clarence Thomas was being grilled on the Hill, as they called it. So it was a really exciting time to be there because those hearings, and a lot of young people don't remember anything about this, but it was really big, big news. And it was really, to me, astounding when I look back at that time that you have all these white senators that are grilling an African-American woman about her reluctant testimony against Clarence Thomas. And as we all know, he was head of the EEOC, and she worked for him, and he was apparently harassing her. And the senators were in disbelief about it. And it was I'm really looking forward to seeing the show because apparently it is a very good rendition of what happened.
Yeah, I think it's tomorrow night on HBO, if I have it right, but I know you can get it on HBO Go regardless. And I don't remember how the case originally came up because, as you said, she was a reluctant witness. Did someone else make the claim initially and then she was brought forward for the confirmation?
You know, as I recall, she had made some complaints while she was there, and then she moved on to somewhere else, and they had still maintained a cordial relationship. She's a very successful woman herself, very well-educated, and was a law professor in Oklahoma, I believe. And I think what happened was when someone didn't want Clarence Thomas to be on the court, they summoned her. They subpoenaed her to come. She didn't voluntarily come there to tell on him, but she had told the truth, and she told the truth consistent with her prior statements. And the people who wanted him confirmed really just grilled her, and you could just see from looking back at some of those transcripts that they didn't understand harassment. They didn't understand what happens to a woman in the workplace when someone is saying inappropriate things all the time. And they went above and beyond her and then confirmed him. So it was a very interesting time. And I think they say after these confirmation hearings, the EEOC claims doubled, literally doubled across the country.
So she literally did change the landscape of that. But sexual harassment, so people understand it in terms of the law, is in the eyes of the beholder?
Well, yeah, it's something that is an unwanted sexual advance that makes you feel uncomfortable in the workplace.
But that could be different for other people, right? I mean,
you could tell
me a dirty joke and I could feel sexually harassed while someone else could just roll with it.
No, that's true. And the key is you basically have to tell the person and you have to tell the employer, listen, I this is making me feel uncomfortable. I don't like that the naked calendar. I don't like the comments. I don't like whatever it is. And then the employer needs to take action to have it stopped at the workplace.
So you got to go through the steps. You got to go through the steps for your company.
That's right. Because if it's just there's just a rogue employee doing things, that's not actionable. It has to be something that the employer fails to stop once notified.
One quick listener question, 630 is where the texter comes from, hails from. Karen, my daughter graduates high school this year. Do I file in court to reduce my child support, or do I need a lawyer for that?
You really don't. You can just file on your own. Sometimes your divorce decree says it automatically terminates, but if it's coming out of your paycheck, you're going to have to do something to get that order. So you basically file a motion to stop child support. It should be a very simple matter. And once that order is entered, you give it to your employer, and your employer stops deducting the child support.
Karen Conti, number at the office?
312-332-7800 or kconti at kcontilaw.com.
Sunday nights at noon and at 8, News Next, 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
You know, a tough hockey game. Played well. Lost momentum again. They scored some power play goals.
We had the lead, and we knew what we needed to do, and you know, we got away from that. We took
you know, too many penalties and, you know, put herself or shot herself in the foot there.
Well, we got to, you know, regroup tomorrow, move to St. Louis, get excited, you know, no pressure. Go try to win one game and come back here for game six. That's got to be the mindset.
Corey Crawford, Andrew Shaw, and Coach Q. Ah, Shuzzy. Shuzzy. He gets a sweater goal off Marian Hossa's shot. He plays his butt off, as he's been playing his butt off, and then he lost his mind. Penalty he took at the end of the game really killed the Hawks' chance of a game-tying goal. And worse was his reaction to the penalty. Look, the officiating is always going to be dicey. And more often than not, they get it right. And when they get it wrong in a close game, it's exceptionally frustrating. Having said that, this team is built on doing things the right way, playing the right way, maintaining their composure. And last night it didn't happen. Now, everybody has a bad night at work, but when you have a bad night at work and you're already down 2-1, now it's 3-1, they've really created a hole. And most of it's self-made, Dave, because as you said, 10-8 total goals in this series. They're down 10-8.
Yep. It's been a very close series. Hawks have outshot the Blues by a pretty substantial margin. Again, in the third period last night, firing a lot of shots at Brian Elliott. He's been great. He's been the Corey Crawford played really well through the first of three games in the series.
Right.
Didn't have as good a game last night, and I don't know if the fight took him out of it.
He had a really good game, I would argue, until the fight.
Yeah.
And once the fight happened, I do think it took him out of it. And you know, there's a reason you don't see the goalie involved in fights in the corner very often, because then who's the goalie? In the middle of action, for the goalie to go and take on... Look, he couldn't know that the Blues player who fell on his head didn't do it intentionally and had nowhere to go because Taves was in the way.
Right. He got pushed into him.
Yeah, he Fabry. Couldn't. But Corey couldn't have known that.
No.
So you can be mad.
Right.
But you can't skate into the corner and start a fight with him and abandon your net.
He's probably a little hypersensitive because he's just come back from an upper body injury.
But then
he gets hit, as he said, he got hit in the head.
Okay.
Right. No, I'm with you.
You get an upper body injury. Guess what we don't need Crawford to have?
You don't need to take
another injury.
A punch to the face or the head.
Hey, I have a fight question, legit. So when the fights start, does play automatically stop?
Not until the whistle blows.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so they can keep continuing
If you had a turnover at center ice and the Blues get a quick shot off, that goal's going to count.
All right, now, with the goalie, does it automatically stop?
No.
A fight?
Goalie's involved?
Correct.
No.
Okay.
No.
Now, the Blackhawks had possession of the puck when the fight started.
Right, but we don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
Because he's literally 15 feet away from his office. He's not in the goal.
From his cubicle.
Here's Crawford last night talking about the fight.
I don't remember too much. Got hit in the head, and I was pretty about that. But, whatever, it's over.
Man of a few words.
But then the second goal, remember, was it 13? I think it was 13 when Crawford was taking all the heat about his glove side weakness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was weak on the glove side. He couldn't stop anything on the glove side. Well, he tightened that up completely. It hasn't even been a discussion. The second goal, not an easy stop. None of them are easy stops. But the second goal, the game tying goal, was a glove side goal that I think he stopped 7 out of 10 times, maybe 8 out of 10 times. He just missed it. Well, that wasn't that long after the fight.
Yeah, that's true.
And the team getting fired up from the fight and coming out in the third period blazing. They came out in the third period, had a stupid penalty. I say all of this because I love this team.
Right.
I love this team, and they've raised the bar of expectations to a point where you just got to go. This is like when your kid does something colossally stupid. You have to sit them down and you go, you're too smart to be this dumb.
Right.
They're too good to do this. They're too smart to do this. And they certainly shouldn't have done this in the position they were in last night.
I'm sure they're getting that talk today. Or maybe they already did last night.
Well, I would also argue that these guys are having to talk with themselves, you know, and Taves right. is going around talking to them. I think they self-discipline well. However, I do think you're going to see appropriate action taken on Andrew Shaw. Whatever the action is remains to be seen. I don't know. Is there a league precedent on lip reading for gay slurs?
But we also don't know what could be heard at ice level.
That's true, too. Right? That's true. But we do know.
We know what we think we saw.
We do know we saw double number ones, and the flip of the double number right. ones, there's going to be something that comes of that, and the Hawks have a very, very strong and consistent pattern of behavior when it comes to community standards and how their players comport themselves.
Can I just say one more thing to both of you, because I'm worried about both of you right now. It's going to be fine. We'll be fine. Mike, you're right. We will be fine.
We don't like feeling this way.
I know, but it's okay. I'll give you both big hugs, and we're going to be okay.
All I ask is that the Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup every year. Is that wrong? Is that too much to ask?
No.
Or at least get to the conference finals.
Yeah.
Anisimov last night on the goal. This is, which clip is this, Jake? I've forgotten already. Tell me.
This is the disallowed goal.
Is the disallowed goal?
Well, it was never.
This is our Hawks replay.
This is our replay.
This is our Hawks replay.
Isn't this
all right.
What you want?
Let's see. Yeah, that's right. I forgot I asked you for this 4 minutes ago. This is sponsored by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. Your Hawks replay, it's a special clip from last night's game on a goal that wasn't a goal, but listen to this.
Well, I don't know why they're waving this off. He thinks that the puck's underneath, but it's not. This is a terrible call by the backside official. This is not going to be popular here in the United Center.
After review, the puck was sitting on the goal line. The goaltender reached back and tied it up. The whistle blew. No goal.
False. False, Chris Rooney. False. You lost sight of it. Admit that. He didn't cover it up. He swatted it back out.
And once again, we have a call made by the officiating staff this season that's as popular here like a narc at a biker's rally.
We don't have much of a race anymore based on what I'm seeing on television. Senator Cruz is just about mathematically eliminated. And we've won another state. As you know, we have won millions of more votes than Senator Cruz, millions and millions of more votes than Governor Kasich. We've won, and now, especially after tonight, close to 300 delegates more than Senator Cruz. We're really, really rocking.
7:23, Brad Mielke from ABC News was with Trump yesterday at Trump Tower. Why don't we with him? He wasn't hanging out with him. He was covering him. And he joins us now. Good morning, Brad.
Yeah, we did not grab a drink together, but I was there.
So we knew that, by way of predictions, that Trump would win. Is his win bigger than we thought?
Absolutely. We were thinking that he'd be in that 50% range, wondering if he'd get those extra delegates, if he managed to crack 50%. He got 60%, and then even more importantly, swept almost all of the state's delegates, and this was a big delegate haul for him. So he's sort of back on track, or at least his campaign says, towards that magic number of 1237.
Have you guys at ABC run those numbers as far as predictions for the remaining primaries, and if 1237 is a percentage, a point or two less than what he needed prior to that?
Well, so he had, as of last night, he needed to get 68% of the remaining delegates if he wanted to lock this thing up. Now that number's down to 63%, so he's got a little bit more wiggle room as he goes through to these other states. However, we don't have reliable polling from all of these states, so we'll be interested to see what happens next Tuesday when five states, even more delegates at stake, go to the polls.
So last night, his number was what, 61?
68%.
Oh, 68, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So it's the first time he's gotten into the 60s, if my memory serves.
Oh, that's right. As far as the statewide vote, yeah, it was right about 60, 61, and that was by far the highest vote total he's ever gotten.
Right, so he would have to repeat that number of times. So 1237 still seems like it's going to be tough.
Well, here's the thing, though. You don't necessarily need to get 90% of the vote to get 90% of the delegates in each state. That's what happened last night. Donald Trump got 60% of the vote, but got 90% of the delegates. So he could continue picking up states and getting large amounts of delegates, particularly when you talk about populous states like Pennsylvania, New Jersey, California. So his team says it's an uphill climb, but it's still possible, unlike Ted Cruz, who got wiped out.
Are there any of the remaining states that are Cruz, states that look promising for Cruz? Maybe Indiana?
Yeah, Indiana is the crucial one for Cruz. You know, next Tuesday is going to be another rough night for Ted Cruz, and we're probably going to be seeing more people calling for Ted Cruz to drop out of the race. You heard Donald Trump do it right there. But if Ted Cruz can rebound with a big victory in Indiana, that will at least convince his supporters that it's worth sticking around until the convention, see if he can't eke out a second, third, fourth ballot nomination.
At this point, there's so much water under the bridge that none of the traditional political moves, like a phone call from the campaign leader or the party leader to say, hey, fellas, you've made a nice run. There's a little something for you, you know, for being a good a player here and stepping aside. None of those friendly phone calls, I believe, could take place on the Republican side, could they?
Yeah, well, I mean, we talk about broker conventions. Well, there's no convention brokers anymore. There's no one that can really unite the party in the way that there used to be. But you heard Donald Trump last night having more of a, dare I say, sort of presidential tone to him, or at least someone who's trying to unify the party, convince people that even if I don't get to 1237, you guys should come over to my side. I will bring Republicans together. That was his message last night.
This is an interesting, Brad Mielke from ABC News is a guest, you know, covering the Republican side and the Trump side in particular. But this is interesting to me. Because as much as I have no faith in Donald Trump and no respect for Donald Trump as a human being, I will say this. The strategy is interesting to me because the strategy at this point, say 60% of the country hasn't even connected to the primary process. Obviously, they hear Trump's name nonstop, but 60% of the country isn't involved in this. And now he becomes the good guy, the presidential guy, the unifier. As more and more people get involved, that would serve him well in the general. So is he smarter than I think he is?
Maybe, but there is still this big disconnect between what Republican voters who get involved in the primary say and what the rest of the country says. So yesterday, the exit polls tell us that of everyone who voted for a Republican, 60% of them said that Donald Trump actually has a better chance against Hillary Clinton in the fall than either of his competitors. Well, pollsters who are sampling everyone across the United States would tell you that's crazy, that it's really John Kasich or perhaps a Paul Ryan or someone who has a good chance against right. Hillary Clinton, not Donald Trump or Ted Cruz. So there's a big distrust between the people that are actually doing the voting in these primaries and the people that will be making decisions going forward.
Now, let's go on this. The massive negatives that Trump and Hillary have, because I brought this up earlier. Has anyone discussed this with you? If they are going head to head, could they actually drive turnout down because so many people can't stand either one of them?
It'd be interesting to see whether people would stay at home because they don't want to vote for someone, but also the idea that you hate the other person so much that you might show up to the polls just to cast your ballot. Yeah. There's going to be a lot of nose-holding, I think, if Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are the nominees, and right now that's exactly what it looks like it might be.
Thank you, Brad. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Brad Mielke, ABC News 728 now. We'll come back to the big story. You want to plug the big story?
What big story is going to be more politics and more. Something interesting. Something might be illegal about Donald Trump's campaign. Well, not so much the campaign, but an item he's using.
I love this story.
Yeah.
At the Brad Mielke, THEBRADMIELKE, if you're going to follow Brad Mielke. 728, back after this, 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
To all the people who supported Senator Sanders, I believe there is much more that unites us than divides us.
There are five primaries next week. We think we're going to do well, and we have a path toward victory, which we are going to fight to maintain.
Bernie Sanders thought he'd do a little better in New York last night than he ended up doing because it's, you know, his hometown. It's Hillary's hometown, too, if you start counting in 2001, I guess.
Ish, yeah.
Yeah,
right around 2000.
But Hillary wins and wins New York. Big. Mark Remillard covers the Democrats for ABC in this case, and Mark joins us now. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
So I was surprised at her margin of victory, especially since it was too close to call when the networks were tripping over themselves as soon as the polls closed. But it seemed to get bigger as the night went on.
Yeah, it was interesting. When you looked at the polls going back, you know, at one point she had more than a 20-point lead over Sanders. And then he kind of narrowed that down to, you know, maybe 10 or 13%. So it was a little bit tighter. And then, yeah, we were at the event last night, and everyone was kind of expecting it to be called at 9 o'clock if the polls were telling any indication. And it was interesting that it didn't come down for, I don't remember exactly the time, but I would guess at least a half hour, 45 minutes later, maybe. And so, yeah, it took a little bit. But, now as the more precincts came in and reporting now, it is looking like a pretty significant win. Right now, the estimates are about 16% difference, that she had 58% to 42%. So it is a significant win for her. It's a big win not only in her home state, which she had to win, as every candidate has had to do if they want a chance to survive, winning in their home state. And she snapped his win streak, which is another big thing for her, and now she has the momentum going into next week.
Mark, she gets 135. Bernie Sanders gets 104. He's taking today off, going to kind of relax, hang out in Vermont. Is this a reassessment point for him? I mean, is this kind of where he says, I'm not going to get this, or maybe his staffers might say to him, look, this is kind of a reassessment time, or are we not at that point yet?
We have conflicting reports coming out of the Sanders campaign on where they're at. The campaign manager for Bernie Sanders said, no, we're for sure going to the convention, and the campaign has always said we're at least going to California. But then one of his top advisors also said that they'll reassess where things are next week. So this was a tough blow to his campaign, and a big boost for Clinton. But next week there are under 500 delegates, but five states up for grabs. And so it seems like they're looking, okay, depending on how we do next week. And as you heard in that clip there, Bernie Sanders expects to do well. He's obviously optimistic, but we'll see how they turn out next week. I think maybe a little bit more of a reassessment, because there's already people starting to flare up those questions again about how legitimate his campaign can be going forward. And if he doesn't do well next week, that's only going to increase that.
The Clinton campaign avoided a full victory dance, but she did again say, it's time for us to move forward. Victory's in sight. What's the likely trajectory of where she goes from here in messaging?
Well, yeah, I think there were two interesting points. Is one, that you said that victory is in sight. She definitely said that. And then she also had that message of unity for the Democrats. She made an appeal to Bernie Sanders supporters saying, hey, it's, we have more that unites us than divides us. So let's start looking at rallying around me. So that's one thing she's definitely saying. But what's interesting, too, is she's also really looking forward to the general election, it seems. She talked a lot about jobs last night, which, if you imagine that Donald Trump becomes the Republican nominee. This is a guy who's a business mogul. He's oftentimes cited as being his supporters believe he'll do well with the economy. So now she's starting to focus a lot on jobs and talking about protecting workers' rights, these kinds of things. So she's probably looking forward to the general now, but she's still, Bernie Sanders has gone a lot farther than anybody thought. And so that's been the thinking the whole time. And here he is once again. People are questioning him, but that remains to be seen. He's not that far behind. He's 275 pledged delegates behind. He's way behind in the super delegates. But in terms of the pledged delegates, if he can start making up ground there, he might be able to sway.
And the super delegates are going to go with the winner.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's where the plan is for the Sanders campaign. If they can start to narrow the gap, which a tough loss last night, of course, because you want to keep narrowing that gap. But if he can get those pledged delegates on his side, then he can start to say to those super delegates, hey, you need to go with what we're winning the pledged delegates. You need to support the will of the people. But at the same time, if time goes on here and he's still not winning the popular vote, he's still not winning in the delegates, then that becomes a much harder argument.
Mark, what I think we're seeing on the side of the Democrats, tell me if you agree with this, they're not necessarily playing nice in the debates, but there's more of a sense of togetherness, not unity, but when one loses, when Bernie was quick to say, well, we want to congratulate Hillary Clinton on her victory, now he's off to Vermont, and vice versa. You don't see that on the Republican side.
Yeah, it's they're definitely, the spats between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton have definitely intensified of late, but certainly there is just this, there's not the same level of down and dirty, it seems like at times like a very vitriolic kind of race between these two. They definitely seem to have a mutual respect for each other, certainly. And so, obviously Sanders is still focusing on his campaign. He's not trying to get his supporters to rally around Clinton at all, so he's still working on his campaign. Clinton is now trying to make that appeal. And so we'll see. It'll be interesting to see if Clinton becomes the eventual nominee, whether she can get those Bernie Sanders supporters who really, there's a number of them that don't like Clinton. And so it'll be interesting to see whether or not she can get them to really rally behind her.
I mentioned this earlier when we were talking to your colleague, Brad Melke, but it is, It's an easy assumption maybe to make, but with the huge negatives that Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump have, do you think turnout could be low for the presidential?
That's a good question. It'd be interesting to see whether or not the general would have that. Now, last night in New York, they found that the Democratic primary was Clinton did well in a reversal of Wisconsin. Clinton was favored in terms of being an inspiring candidate. That's not something we've always heard from her or supporters in the Democratic Party. Bernie Sanders has been the one where we've kind of seen this grassroots really get the people out to vote kind of thing, especially with the youth. And so we'll see if those kind of people, the people that have really supported Sanders, if Clinton wins the nomination, we'll see. Like I said, if they'll rally around her, they'll still be excited about this election. I guess it might depend on who they put up in the Republican Party, because that may stoke the flames in the Democratic Party to say, well, we need to really make sure we win the White House here. It'll be interesting to see.
More from you as time allows, and we appreciate your time as always. Mark Gremillard, covering the Dem side of the New York story for ABC. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Space ice cream. I don't know what space ice cream is.
That's what I was...
Oh, the freeze-dried stuff they probably have in
like, you know. Tang?
It's made out of Tang, yeah.
If the glass is empty, it must be Tang.
Yeah, so they have... But that turns into ice cream, depending on what orbit you're in.
But it's made out of your own urine, so...
You couldn't help yourself, could you? You're going to go back on suspension. I'm going to suspend you again. If you mention bodily functions on this show one more time, I told you I'm going to take the elevator to the seventh floor and I'm going to pound it.
What did I tell you? What did I tell you? What did I tell you?
But it's true. That's what they...
Stop it. Stop it.
Show your mouth.
One second.
Steve, come back.
Now, I haven't killed Grzanich yet, so as far as you know, he's been behaving.
Yet is the
yet be the key word.
Yeah,
you haven't been in the newsroom.
I've been behaving. I'm being a nice boy.
I don't know how you didn't become like a urologist or a proctologist with your fascination of discussing those topics. Don't answer the question.
Zip, zip.
Let's go to stories that don't fit anywhere else. From Brookside, Alabama, a suspect found a creative place to hide during an Alabama drug raid. Ask me where.
Where?
Inside the clothes dryer.
Oh.
It's why it helps if you're a tiny bandit. You need to be a tiny bandit, because otherwise you need one of those industrial jumbo dryers. Brookside, Alabama police said about an hour and 45 minutes of searching the house found no one. The 33-year-old suspect eventually told police they had spent so much time searching the house Wednesday afternoon that he fell asleep in the dryer. There was an odd noise that could have been snoring from inside the dryer as the police searched the house that finally revealed his hiding place.
Well, it can be so nice and warm in there, you know. And
is this another place you've napped?
That would be a good idea. Some nice warm towels.
Have you already done it? Have you napped in the dryer?
No, I have not.
Have you?
I have not.
Okay.
How do you breathe?
Item number two. We talked about mattresses with our friends earlier on the program. How about a smart alert on your mattress that lets you know if your partner's been cheating on you?
Wait, a what? An alert?
A smart mattress alert that lets you know if your partner's been cheating on you.
On that mattress?
The Smartress is a new mattress with embedded sensors that will send an alert to your phone whenever somebody's using your bed in a questionable way.
You know what, though? There's a lot of room for error there,
yeah,
I would
what
think.
What if the dog jumps on the bed?
Or what if the cleaning lady's cleaning?
And starts humping the bed.
See, he couldn't help himself. It's just... Make a note of this during the 8 o'clock hour that Grzanich should hide as I take the elevator to 7 and choke him. The Smartress mattress, $1,700. Now, there's questions on whether or not this is real, but it wouldn't be that hard. Mary, they put traffic sensors in the highway to determine traffic.
That is true.
So why couldn't you put sensors in the bed to determine if people are using it?
I suppose you could, but why don't you just put a camera in the room or something?
Well, suddenly it's got to be about video.
But that doesn't necessarily mean they're cheating.
Well, right, like Andreas, I mean, anything could jump on the bed.
Yeah.
A dog, the maid.
There's a certain motion to the ocean that would be indicative of, you know, whatever readings you're getting back on your own personal Richter scale on your phone.
Could you imagine your phone? Oh, my mattress is talking. I have to go.
Can you imagine what they'd say in hotels?
It would change things. Man claiming, item number three, man, these are all stories I don't have time for in the rest of the show. Man claiming to be a time traveler from the year 2020 goes into an Arby's and steals chicken and bacon sandwiches. This guy I like. A man claiming to be from years into the future ran into an intersection. He kicked some cars and then ran into an Oklahoma City Arby's where he hopped over the counter. He stole chicken sandwiches and bacon. Dante Rashad Anderson, 36, started at Carl's Jr., yelling at employees. They gave him food, but when they refused to give him any money, he ran across the street to Arby's. The police asked him a few questions, and he was overheard saying the following. This is a direct quote. I got bacon and chicken, and I scared one lady. She thought I was going to hurt her, which I was not. I was just hungry and wanted some food, and I'm from the future. I am from planet Earth, but I'm advanced from you. I am from the year 2020, 4 years from now.
What?
Well, in 2020, you're still going to want chicken and bacon.
I would think.
But it also says that maybe chicken and bacon may not be available in the future, which kind of concerns me.
It should. Why don't you go report on it right now? Why don't you go into the future and find it? Steve, I'm assigning you with a news story. I want you to go find future bacon and future chicken.
I'm on it.
Master Sergeant Gary Knight from the Oklahoma City Police Department says that Anderson was, you ready? Possibly under the influence of narcotics. That's fine detective work right there. So just to review, your mattress will tell you if anyone's using it to have sex other than you, and the guy from the future wants more chicken and bacon. It's 7:59. We're back after this on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Or kiss me, kiss me good.
Hey, at 11 out, Dean Richards live at Channel 9. Are you ensconced in the corner of the newsroom?
I am.
How's your ensconcing?
It's super ensconcy today.
Yeah, that's how I felt about it. Hey, Sarah Gendra, I don't know her, but seems like a delightful young lady.
Very, very nice. One of our traffic reporters here at WGN TV.
Pregnant?
Yeah.
By a lot?
I think she's pretty close.
Right. So are you trained in being able to birth a baby if it happens on set?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I went through the special training. I've got my old catcher's mitt from when I was in Little League.
It's a good call by you.
Years ago. You never know.
Right. And don't you have to boil water? It seems like on all the old TV shows, somebody was boiling water.
Boiling water and get some clean towels.
Wouldn't you guys just take her to the hospital?
Don't really know what to do.
Now, that's a thought.
I mean,
that's
instead
an absolute thought.
Instead of putting Dean through the whole rigmarole.
Well, we're close to, we got Northwestern. We got 90 world-class hospitals 10 blocks from us or less.
Yeah, she can take the chopper.
But Dean is over at Bradley Place, and there's nothing around Bradley Place. You might as well be in a desert in the Middle East. There's nothing over there.
We've got a few nice things.
Yeah, there's Masonic.
Oh, there is?
Masonic. There's Swedish Covenant.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's nearby, but the thing about that is, she's got traffic reports all morning long, and if she goes to have a baby, we're going to miss the traffic reports.
Well, couldn't she hold it?
How often does labor? I was going to say, how often, labor pains come when? It depends on.
Well, especially early, because if she can time her labor where it's not during traffic, that would be less selfish.
Right. I think if anyone who's stuck in a traffic jam can relate to the kind of pain that a woman is going through during childbirth.
Well, let's go to Mary's uterus on this. Mary, you birthed four children, is that right?
Oh, three last time I checked.
Three, sorry. Of those three children, the labor starts quickly, or do you have time to do the traffic?
I had plenty of time. But you can ask Andy, because I was pregnant with my last one.
And Andy's
when I was
the
working
father?
Right next to Andy in the cubicle, and he would scare me every morning, just try anything to get my water to break.
Oh,
right,
he was
Andy?
Trying to move the process along.
Absolutely, because it was it was scary for us. I didn't know what to do.
Right. Right. Andy there in a rain poncho every
exactly.
morning.
Right. I think I did work till the very
floppy
last
hat.
Day.
I like all the men commenting on this story. This is very funny.
Yeah, exactly.
About she can hold it, she can do the traffic.
Well, we're asking.
Wait, is this her first baby? I don't know.
Dane, is this her first baby?
I believe, yes, it is.
Oh. Well, I had plenty of time with my first baby, that's for sure. Like 2 days of labor.
Point is, we're all ready, all of us. We're ready to go. Tom Skilling, I went through the practice. Should she have a low front or a high pressure system?
Check the barometric pressure.
Did
Skilling say, oh, Sarah, that's great. You're doing great.
I don't know what you're talking
about. He would be a great coach, though.
It would be a great coach.
I tell you, you're looking great with that. That's look fantastic.
Keep breathing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Doing great,
right.
Sarah. Sarah Gindra, by the way, looks fantastic.
She looks
does
great.
Look great. She's beautiful.
I saw her last week. She looks great.
Yeah.
If I were her, though, if I was having pain, I'd get the heck out of there. I wouldn't trust you guys. No.
Well, that's a selfish move. If labor takes as long as you said, she could go into labor today and still work tomorrow.
I'll take over traffic reports for her.
Yeah.
She'll have to go.
Yeah. Now, I have heard of some women who go into labor with a first child, and they have it like 14 minutes later. That's not very common, though, is it?
No.
Okay.
But it does happen.
Yeah.
Not with me.
All right, Dean, now that we've finished that portion of the entertainment, because it was mostly entertaining to you and I.
I was amused. I have entertainment breaking news today. I don't know if you have to break for traffic.
Well, I was going to do that, but I'd rather hear your breaking news.
People Magazine Most Beautiful issue has...
Me on the cover again?
...is getting ready to be released, and they released... who is the most beautiful woman in the world?
Oh, that wouldn't be me.
Who do you think that might be?
The most beautiful woman in the world.
Angelina Jolie.
According to People magazine.
Is it a celebrity this time?
Yeah.
Most beautiful woman.
They stuck
in
their
the
necks
world.
Out this
beautiful
year.
Beautiful.
Oh, I know who it is,
the queen.
I know it is Princess Kate.
Nope.
Oh, come on. She'd be perfect.
We'll hold that thought and we'll come back. Don't tell us. We'll guess. Come back as we guess who the hottie is.
You can travel Chicago. You'll be calling his name. Dean Richard.
So Dean's question, and the first person to answer it correctly wins $1 million.
Wow.
I have another guess.
I have a guess, too.
It's a good prize.
Caitlin,
do you want some clues?
Caitlin Jenner.
Nope.
Can I guess again?
All right, go ahead.
Amal Clooney?
Nope.
Oh. Rihanna.
I'm going to give you a clue.
Rihanna?
She's 47 years old.
Is it Rihanna?
Oh.
Not Rihanna.
Is it two Rihannas?
I wanted like Jane Fonda.
I got it. I got it, Dean.
Is it Rihanna and Scarlett Johansson?
Go ahead.
Beyonce.
Not Beyonce.
Beyonce's on 47.
Old. She was motivated to take care of herself early on after she was told she had a bubble butt.
J-Lo.
Not Kim Kardashian.
It's J-Lo.
Nope.
It's got to be J-Lo.
Nope.
No. J-Lo would be
J-Lo's
good, though.
J-Lo's got a bubble butt, and she's 47.
Sure does. And she always complains about
Dean,
it.
Dean, be honest. Dean, can you read?
Bubble butt?
Wait, are you just guessing?
This may be an article from 1996.
All right, I give up. Who is?
Jennifer Aniston.
Oh. What?
Jennifer Aniston.
She is beautiful.
She said when she heard the news, there was kind of an excited teenage-y kind of moment.
Has she never won it before?
I don't believe she has.
What has she done lately? Nothing.
She has a new movie coming out in a couple of weeks.
She's totally looked hot. That's what she's done.
She's in the mainstream.
Hey, take it from me, Mary. That's a full-time job looking hot.
You know what? She's got a personal trainer. She never had a child.
Yeah, so do I.
I wonder she looks good.
I never had a child. I have a personal trainer.
She says she exercises 6 days a week for about an hour every day.
Yep, me too.
But that doesn't mean she doesn't indulge in her favorites like chips and guacamole.
Yeah, this one time she had a whole chip.
Or her husband's pasta carbonara.
Yeah. She actually go by and sniff it while he's eating it. I haven't interviewed her. I would remember.
She's nice.
She's sweet.
She's nice.
Delightful.
I can
ask about me?
Ask Dean's hesitation.
I just don't get it how they pick
Dean
the most beautiful.
Dean, finish that thought.
She's nice.
You don't like her?
But...
pleasant.
No, listen, I know you inside out. You have never described a celebrity as nice in that manner. Was she bitchy to you?
No.
Come on, let's out her.
No.
Okay.
Maybe a little reserved.
Oh.
Maybe a little guarded.
Was she flirty?
I would not say
was
that.
Was she trying to rub your head?
No.
For luck?
That's
like she had a movie coming out and she'd rub her head?
Besides the amount of people who do rub my head.
That's just Halle Berry.
Why do people feel like if they see a bald guy, they have to rub their heads?
I don't know. You know, I've grown to like it. Dean's report is sponsored by Wintrust Community Banks. So it's not Caitlyn Jenner.
It's not.
Okay.
Jennifer Aniston. She'll be there for you.
And she's been beautiful for years. I mean, why not?
Well, what do you think? It should be like senior division?
I don't know. Yeah, I think some of the older ladies should get it.
Like Jane a statute Fonda. Of limitations.
Look at Jane before time, you know. Jane Fonda is beautiful. You got to admit.
A miracle she's surgery award.
Sophia Loren. Bring them on.
Yeah, they're all beautiful.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the stories. Tracy Morgan is canceling a show in Mississippi. Is this because of the law?
That's because of the law there that allows people to not serve LGBT people. He says that he looks forward to the day that he can reschedule the concert, his performance, when the law is either repealed or amended. Ironically, it was Tracy Morgan himself was called out for homophobic statements, much like Andrew Shaw's statement from last night several years ago.
Yeah, and he was doing his act.
Has really, really, really come around on this. So this adds another celebrity name now, along with Bruce Springsteen, along with Pearl Jam. The list goes on and on for other people who've canceled shows in states where anti-LGBT efforts are going on.
Is it Rihanna?
Can't we all get along, Steve? Can't we all just get along?
We should get along. Blake Shelton, who's suing him?
He is suing In Touch Weekly Magazine.
For?
Defamation of character.
You can't defame a celebrity.
Invasion of privacy.
You can't invade the privacy of a celebrity.
It's a $2 million defamation lawsuit that a judge yesterday said can move forward. They had had a cover story with a headline that read, Rehab for Blake. He says he's never been to rehab, and the judge agreed.
I may be a drunk, but I've never been to rehab.
That is telling readers that he has an alcohol problem when he says that he's never been to rehab. So the case will now proceed, and we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, I saw a headline this week about it. It said, I drink, get over it. Which, by the way, is another one of his songs.
I drink, get over it.
Is he a likable sort?
I've never interviewed Mr. Blake.
Prince went to the Star Wars set in London, or a couple of princes went to the Star Wars set in London.
Not Prince, like Purple Rain Prince. Actual princes, William and Harry, they went. They're shooting, you know, the new Star Wars movie. They're in London right now. So these two guys, you know, one of the perks of being royalty, Steve, is you can just show up at stuff like this and, you know, you get the VIP treatment.
Well, somebody has to call. You can't just barge in and go, hello, Harry and Wills are here.
I think that's what they did. Hey, who's at the gate? Let them in.
Right.
Let them in. They're royalty.
Right.
They got in. They got a personal tour. They got, you know, behind the scenes. And they got to fight with lightsabers.
Please tell me there's video of that.
There is video of that.
Well, that's kind of funny.
There is video of that, of the two princes. I'm sure Queen Elizabeth could not be prouder of her grandsons.
Well, you know, it's funny because when I talked to Daniel Craig for whatever the last Bond movie was, I asked him about when the Queen did the opening to the Olympics in London.
Yeah.
And remember that fake film where she goes up in a helicopter and she parachutes in and they save the Olympics?
Yeah.
And he said she's very funny. She got a great sense of humor, and she liked being an action star. So maybe she fully endorses the lightsaber battle of her grandsons.
In the next movie, you never know that there may be a queen underneath one of the stormtrooper costumes.
How great would that be? Take the helmet off, and it's queen.
Hello! Hello, my royal subjects.
I wish I had Star Wars references so I could do the queen's voice.
May the force be with you.
All right. Well, listen, I think we've done all we can do here today. But once again, the big winner, the most beautiful woman in the world is
Caitlyn Jenner.
Jennifer Lawrence.
Jennifer Aniston. Aniston.
Jennifer Aniston.
Aniston. All right,
just so we're clear. Enjoy your day, buddy.
You do the same.
No, you first. Yep. 8:28. We're back after this. Andy Mazur's in for Dave Ennett. Good to see Andy. We'll talk to him in a few minutes on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
President's in Saudi Arabia, and the Saudis are close allies of the United States in the same way that your family with your cousin who always shows up because you are. We need them. They need us. It's not the greatest thing in the world, but it is what it is. You could be an ally with another country and not agree with their way of doing things. There are certainly allegations of human rights violations, the way women are treated, in Saudi Arabia. It's certainly, there are many things that are specifically non-American in values. But Saudi Arabia is geographically desirable. Saudi Arabia is also desirable in that they will fight Al-Qaeda. But here's the rub. The 9/11 Commission report is not the same as the intelligence report. The intelligence report is where this 28 pages story has come from. This was an examination in 2002 of what the FBI and CIA knew before and after the report and why they weren't talking to each other. In the midst of that report is a 28-page section, a full section of the report that deals with financing of the hijackers that took down the World Trade Center, flew a plane into the Pentagon, and would have flown another plane in if not for the heroes of Flight 93. So it's the money, stupid. If you have 19 hijackers coming to the United States, I believe 17 of them didn't speak English. Where did they get the money for training? Where did they get the money to learn whatever English they needed to learn to get by? Where did they get the money to go to the strip clubs we know they went to? Where did they get the money to eat? Where did they get the money to put gas in cars? Where did they get the money? And it comes down to one of three possibilities from people who have actually read the report. Former Senator Bob Graham from Florida has been very outspoken about all of this, and he's the one that said, look, I find it very hard to believe that given those circumstances, those 19 could have existed here without help from within and outside the country. In other words, people that we haven't caught yet. So all of that leads to this. It's one of three things. It's either someone in the Saudi family, in the royal family itself. We're right. talking about one of the princes. There's an allegation about a couple of princes. There's a rumor about a couple of different princes that maybe it was them. There's an allegation about the Saudi government, which seems to be the least likely because the Saudi government as a whole going, hey, I got a plan. How about we fund the people to go to the United States and knock down the buildings? They had specific problems with Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. This was an Al-Qaeda plot. So the idea that it was a sanctioned Saudi government thing, not so much. Or that it's other expats and rich Saudis who are Al-Qaeda favorable, who live in Saudi Arabia and have decided to promote the Al-Qaeda agenda in that way on 9/11.
That could be the most likely scenario.
Yeah. Even more so than the royal family.
Right.
But it wouldn't surprise me if there was a wingnut or two in the royal family yeah. who decided to do this as well, especially with all the money they're sitting on. So the Saudi government, because of this, and there was a big 60 Minutes story a couple of weeks ago that is that's led to so much of this talk, because it's all about declassifying those 28 pages. Mm-hmm. If you back it up, the easy assumption is you blame Bush. Well, Bush had to know this. Bush saw the 28 pages. Yeah, absolutely.
W, yeah.
Yeah. Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, all aware of it. Had to be, as were many members of Congress. However, when President Obama became president in 2008, he also had access to all of this. And he now has the power to declassify these 28 pages. If he doesn't choose to declassify it, there is a lesser known way to do it in Congress where the Senate and the House collectively or separately could declassify the documents as well, though there's an extra hurdle that has to go with that. If they're declassified, then they become news stories. They become a member, you know, they're part of the media day. And then you know what's in those. Keeping in mind that image is everything in the Middle East, the last thing the Saudis want is to be specifically named as financially supporting the greatest attack on U.S. soil since Pearl Harbor. They don't want to be the guys that allowed that. They don't want to be. But it's not a conspiracy theory to go, hold on a second. If Bush and Obama read the 28 pages, and they knew that the Saudis in some form were covering up for someone in their country or in their family that did this, why didn't they come forward? Why didn't they say anything? Well, the why is because of the importance of the Saudi relationship and the lesser importance of going of who these people are, because you have to believe that our intelligence people are going after them to catch them and bring them to justice. And maybe in some form they already have. They could be at Guantanamo. You don't know because you don't know who they are. So there's a specific reason that the 28 pages haven't been declassified that we don't know.
So you think they should be declassified?
I do, but I want people to understand that if you declassify them, there are people that have seen them that don't feel that way, who know why they don't feel that way, and I don't think Bush and Obama would be engaged in a cohesive cover-up that the two agree on. I think in their opinion, the best interest of the United States is served by having those 28 pages not revealed.
Really?
It's the only logical explanation. Okay. Otherwise, as president of the United States, why wouldn't Barack Obama say, well, you're going to see this now?
See, I thought you would say the opposite. I thought you would say in the best interest, they should be declassified and we should.
I want to see them. I want to know.
I want to know.
And
too.
I'm not so concerned about Saudi Arabia's image. I'm not so concerned about the Saudis protecting each other. But I don't have to get up every day and be in charge of the national interests of the United States and all the interminglings that we have going on. Here's the other piece of this, and this goes to the conspiracy theory as well. The Saudi Arabian government has threatened to sell hundreds of billions of dollars worth of American assets should the U.S. Congress pass a bill that could hold the kingdom responsible for any role in 9/11. Now, at a time where they need money anyway, because oil prices drop so significantly, this will be a nice little excuse to move some of this stuff anyway. But this is also the revenge factor. So there's more going on here than meets the eye. It's not a Bush-Cheney-Rumsfeld thing. It's a Bush-Cheney-Rumsfeld-Obama thing. And the presidents of the United States see things that we never see and have to make decisions based on those things, on what's good or bad for America. And they're decisions that we can't agree with or wouldn't agree with, given the normal course of the day and what we know. They know stuff we don't know. It doesn't mean they're smarter. Certainly they're not. But in this case, maybe what we don't know is a good thing.
Maybe, maybe. But also, too, to your point, what the Saudi government knows now might not necessarily have been what maybe they didn't know then.
Right.
To your point, when you said somebody within the family or, you know, expats, whatever.
And what if the Saudis called in a favor and go, okay, you got us. We didn't know this was going on.
Right.
We didn't know these people were acting this way. We have them in jail in Riyadh. We have them. Here they are. Take them to Guantanamo. But we can't know that. Now, the bigger problem here, of course, is the cat's out of the bag. 60 Minutes did the story. Now the 28 pages are out there. They're like the 18 minutes of the Nixon tapes, yeah. The Watergate tapes. Once they're out there, it's easy for the rest of us to go, well, what's the government hiding now? So we want to know. But just because we want to know doesn't mean we should know. That's all I'm saying.
That's just deep. That's
keep
good.
That in mind. It's 8:52. You know, producer Samberg didn't get a lot of sleep last night. However, she brought up something about straws this morning. She wanted to have a, you know, like when you're super tired, and when you're super tired, you say things you wouldn't normally say?
Yes.
She had a deep discussion about straws that I've asked her to join us on the air in a second to try to explain her straw theory.
Okay.
Future scientists should listen. All right, before we get to that, you're going to Greece this fall?
Yeah, I'm going to Greece. You've been hearing some of the advertisements on the radio. Steve Bertrand Travel is hosting this trip. And Anna DeVlantis and I were supposed to do this, but she is unable to join me. So I'm
going to be hosting. Anna not
going? Well, I can't tell you.
What do you mean?
I can't tell you.
Is she in the 28 pages?
I don't know.
Oh.
She might be.
I guess not.
No, she had a family conflict.
Oh,
so she
scheduling.
Wasn't able to go. So yeah. So
I don't know
go.
How you or she do anything without a family conflict. Because every weekend there's 9,000 Greek cousins. Can you actually say to your Greek cousins, I'm going to Greece, and then it's okay?
It was funny. We have Greek Easter a week from Sunday. So May 1st is Greek Easter. So I was on the phone with my cousin last night. And
Of course you were.
My poor cousin is trying to coordinate with everybody about what, you know, and it's one of those things where don't bring anything. Just bring yourself. No. You have to bring something, but you can't just bring something little. It has to be a ham or two chickens.
How many hams do you need?
Potatoes. Oh, trust me. You heard me trying to make the ham arrangements yesterday.
I was in a band, I was in a band called the Hammer Arrangements.
But yeah, we are doing this. It's an unbelievable trip, first of all, because Greece is just stunning and beautiful and one of my favorite places in the world to visit. I do a lot of traveling, and Greece is without a doubt my number one place to go. So I'm so excited to be able to do this, and it includes everything, Steve. This is what's really cool about this, because it's $3,900 with everything. Round trip airfare from Chicago direct to Athens, all your taxes, all your surcharges, your hotel, and these are 5-star hotels.
Wow.
The food, you get to visit everything. And if I were going to put a tour together, I would put everything on here that's already on here.
Oh, so you know the places, and these places are
great. Oh, these are great restaurants. These are great hotels.
What about getting around on the ground when I'm there? Can I walk, or do I need to rent a car?
You're going to be in a bus.
So on a bus?
If you need
a bus with other Greeks?
If you need special arrangements, don't think if you have to walk fast. This is going to be a laid-back, fun trip. We're going to go see the Acropolis, the Parthenon, the Archaeological Museum. We're going to go to Delphi. We're going to go to Olympia. We're going to see all the temples of all the gods. So it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful trip. So,
well, that price actually seems pretty good for all that.
People are my cousins, actually, a couple were emailing.
By the way, when you refer to your cousins, sometimes I think it's code.
No, it's not. Trust me.
It's actually your cousins.
Although most Greeks either are related or we definitely all know each other.
Okay.
But yeah, that includes the airfare too, which airfare to Athens, for those of us know, could be $1,200 to $1,500.
Sure.
So this includes everything.
Airfare, hotel,
everything.
All,
the 10, all
right, so
tour.
What do you do? You call Bertrand?
Yeah, call Bertrand at 847-606-6065. You can go to our website, wgnradio.com, under the events section. Just search for Greece, and you will see it. So again, Bertrand's number is 847-606-6065, and we are selling out pretty quickly. I'm very happy about that.
Oprah!
So, Opa.
I got to learn
Opa. Opa.
Andy Mazur's here, and Andy, you know Mary Sandberg.
I do.
Yeah, and Mary Vandeveld from the 7th floor, feel free to chime in this as well. I think everybody on the show is a coffee drinker but me, is that right?
Nope.
Oh, you don't drink coffee either?
Just tea and Diet Coke.
Okay, well, every morning I get a Diet Coke. I hit the drive-thru at McDonald's for a Diet Coke every morning. That's the coffee to me. You, Sandberg, and I don't know if this is related to the fact that you slept 45 minutes last night, you actually have this theory. You say the reason McDonald's Diet Coke is better than any other Diet Coke is because of the straw.
Yes, the straw has a little bit more girth than most straws, and so it comes up in this most perfect cylinder to your mouth.
So
its aromas are, I don't know, it's perfect for the tongue. It's the bigger straw.
So it's slightly more, the circumference is slightly larger.
Yes, it's
like
more
thicker,
girth.
Like thicker. Yeah.
So that allows wider. For the proper carbonation balance?
Yes, because otherwise if it's too thin, you're just getting bubbles and you're not getting actual liquid. And so they have perfected the straw.
Am I still in the penalty box?
Yes. All right. Yes. Have you consulted a scientist?
I have not. I'm my own scientist.
Now, I know by way of taste, which is my only anecdotal results that I could share with you at this time, it is better. It's better than any other Diet Coke you're going to get.
Yes, it is. Everyone will agree. I'm sure people would text in. It has.
There could be people texting in right now that are calling you nuts.
My friend Becky would agree with you. She was on the search one time for the best Diet Coke in the Chicago area, and she said McDonald's as well.
It's always McDonald's.
I agree.
Hand down.
I agree, too. Yep.
Did you know about the straw?
I never realized the straw was fatter.
It is. And it's, you know, got the red stripe and the yellow stripe.
Wait, what does the color of the stripes have to do with it?
I'm just so jarring people's memories in their car.
You can match it to your outfit?
She doesn't bend, right?
It does not bend.
She's painting a picture. Go ahead.
Okay. And it's strong, so it never gets punctured like some of those other straws when you have to take paper off or anything like that. You know, it's a sturdy straw.
The Starbucks straw.
It's like the old-fashioned straw.
Biting my tongue so hard.
The Starbucks straw.
Here's the reason I think it's important to discuss this, because this is a on-air way to test if the new producer of the show, Sandberg, is nuts. Texters at 312-981-7200. Let me go to Mike Jacobson on this. Now, Mike, you produce this show as well. Have you seen anything indicating that Sandberg may be losing it?
Not until today.
So the straw thing really is it. All right, yeah.
Steve Grzanich not going to agree with
me? He's dying to speak.
I left him in a penalty box. All right, I'll take you out for a second. Okay. But if you say anything that's wrong, I'm going to come after you.
No, I'm going to defend Mary on this. I think Mary I just think she's a little tired this morning.
Okay.
Maybe.
Okay.
I'm going to defend her, the validity.
The validity, absolutely the best Diet Coke ever.
Well, I don't need you for that. I already said that.
The thickness of the straw doesn't matter. I don't.
Yes, best Coke, too, according to a texter. Best Coke, too, the carbonation is perfect.
Perfect.
I go out of my way to get my large Coke Zero the best.
Oh, I hate Coke Zero.
But why? Don't be so judgmental. Sometimes the Diet Coke's down. But you say it's the straw.
It's the straw. It's the straw. It's not.
Have you thought to have maybe the University of Chicago give you grant money so you could look into this in any way, shape, or form?
You know what? Probably. Or maybe over at 1871, they're already got some kind of incubator thing happening.
You see Howard? Howard would be all over this.
Straw technology.
Yeah.
Guess what day it is?
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Hawks game 4 tomorrow night. I'm guaranteeing we're going to even it at 2.
Josh hit the score! It's a power play goal! It's 2-1 Hawks!
I am the smartest man alive!
A bad giveaway at the Hawk line. 4-2 St. Louis.
Uh-oh.
He sidesteps the blue and fires. He scores! That deflects through the air and over the head of Brian Elliott. And the Hawks are back to within a goal of the Blues.
This is what you wanted. You needed one.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
Yeah! Blues win this one. The Blackhawks are up against the wall. Elimination opportunity coming up for the St. Louis Blues two nights from now.
Hawks game four tomorrow night. I'm guaranteeing they're going to even it at two. Well, I guess there's some good news. Good news is I'm never going to guarantee anything again, ever. I can't even guarantee that it's Wednesday morning.
It's okay. It's okay. Andy wasn't here for your freak out.
I didn't freak out. I've made very logical points all morning. At Judd underscore Surratt. Oh, by the way, we have an update on Strawgate. All straws matter. We'll get to that coming up, too. But let me get to Judd. Good morning, Judd. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm bitter, disillusioned, confused.
I didn't hear the freak out. I wish I was around for
that. No, it wasn't a freak out. It's just, I know, look, here's what we know. We know collectively that we don't like to feel this way. We don't like to be in this position. We're not like the rest of the league. We expect to be better. And after 30 minutes of really strong hockey last night and a really close series, I mean, the wheels came off. The wheels came off.
Well, you had some self-inflicted wounds there. And if you think about the last couple of games, that's really what's happened to you in games three and four. And last night, again, you rally back. The building is energized. You rally with a couple of goals. You take yourself and put yourself in a 2-1 lead. And then you take some preventable penalties. And the Blues, they've torched the Blackhawks here on the man advantage. Certainly here in the last two games, I think they've gone 4-for-12 on the power play. And that allowed the Blues to rally, take a one-goal lead. Then you had a giveaway by Trevor Van Riemsdyk, who has really played well throughout the series up until Game 4. And he gets a pass where he tries to throw it across the ice through the middle. It's picked off by Alex Steen. He's able to finish. Now you're in a one-goal hole. Fine. You get the goal by Duncan Keith. And while I certainly respect the effort that you got from Andrew Shaw last night, you have to show a little bit more discipline, and it's a difficult penalty to take. I understand Joel Quenneville was upset about it. He felt there was an inconsistency with respect to the calls, but that puts you down a man with 2 minutes left. You're trying to get the equalizer. You wanted to be able to try and get that equalizer and make it 4-4, 6-on-5 rather than 5-on-5. It didn't happen.
Yeah, and that's the kind of undisciplined, mistake-ridden play that we don't expect from these guys. And it's not easy to just blanket analyze it, but are the Blues in their heads?
I think there's certainly a level of frustration, and maybe maybe the Blackhawks are fighting some of their confidence. You can certainly see how much their game changed, the Blackhawks' game changed, after they were able to open the scoring, then they were able to tie things up at one. Then all of a sudden you could see the energy and the emotion started to flow in their game. So I think that there is some truth to that. But if you look across this series, the smarter team, the more disciplined team, the more structured team has been the St. Louis Blues.
We'll get to the Andrew Shaw fallout in a bit, but the Corey Crawford thing was disturbing because even though you're going to get a whistle soon, the two implications in that are you just came back from an injury. Don't go mixing it up, no matter how upset you are. And by the way, I don't fault him for being upset because he doesn't know what precipitated him being run over by the fact by one of the St. Louis Blues. He doesn't know that Taves is in the way and blah, blah, blah. So he goes, he leaves his post. He leaves two posts and he goes over and he mixes it up in the corner. It was dumb on a couple of levels. And, you know, I get that it can fire up the team, but I'm not so sure it wasn't in his head when the game tire got by him.
Well, I don't know about that. But what I can't say is I think for all the goalies, they're certainly very sensitive about getting run over in the crease. And, right. Yes, Robbie Fabry may have gotten a little push from behind. And Corey Crawford, listen, he was upset. He was enraged. He and Fabry went at it in the corner, and the Blackhawks were the beneficiary out of that situation to come out of there with a power play, and right. They were able to tally on that power play. You want more energy and more urgency up and down your lineup. Andrew Shaw, when he has played, we can talk about the other issues a little bit later, but when he has played, he's been noticeable because the energy, urgency, desperation, emotion that he's giving you. And Corey Crawford is giving you that too, but you're not getting that from enough guys up and down your roster.
Judd, where do you go from here as far as maybe what Q is thinking with lineup situation? I know it's, you don't want to panic, but obviously this is a one-game series now for the next three games.
Let me tell you, I'm anchoring the fourth line, so maybe we are panicking.
I think that this is a lineup issue.
I don't either.
What you're getting from the players while they're executing whistle to whistle. In fact, you can probably make an argument, and Joel had talked about the fact that he wanted much more of a four-line rotation in Game 4. And he may have finally found the right combinations, but the problem was that you had these self-inflicted wounds. Let's face it, and Joel's talked about this in the past, it's a cruel business. It's a results-oriented business, and your best players have not been on the sheet enough. And you look at the St. Louis Blues core players, Vladimir Tarasenko's got three, Jaden Schwartz has two, including the game winner in Game 3, Alex Steen popped onto the sheet yesterday. David Backes, your captain, had the game winner in Game 1. When you look at the Blackhawks core players, Duncan Keith aside, not enough of your best players have shown up on the sheet and made a difference in the course of the game.
And do you see, because you see the game at a different level, are you seeing something in particular in the way they're handling Taves and Kane, even though Patrick had a couple breakaways last night? Are they doing something special that other teams didn't do?
No, I don't think so. I just think it's a lot harder to score in the playoffs. Listen,
right. You've
got a goaltender in Brian Elliott who's been fabulous. And unfortunately, the way that goals are scored, and it's magnified here in the playoffs, tips, screens, rebounds, second opportunities, you were able to beat Brian Elliott last night three times. But each time you had a guy that was driving to the front of the net, and it was Andrew Shaw who figured in that scoring prominently in a couple of those goals. You don't have enough of that going in front of the Blues net, and you need more of that from your forwards up and down the lineup.
You know, Judd, in recent memory with 3-1 deficits, I mean, you go back to the Red Wings series in 13, and then you go back to the Kings series in 14. Does this appear like one of those situations to you?
You know, it does come to mind, obviously, the Red Wings series, Andy, because, listen, there's that famous shot of Jonathan Taves in the penalty box, and Brent Seabrook comes over and says, listen, calm down, we're going to take care of this, and the Blackhawks were able to rally back and ultimately win that game in 7. But as Jonathan reminded us yesterday, and I thought Troy was really appropriate to point it out, that is history. Yes, you can draw on that experience to try and get you out of this 3-1 hole against a very good St. Louis Blues team, far better than you've seen in the past, far more skilled, much more resilient, better leadership up front. But I think the point is that's history. That's a different team and a different opponent. You're going to have to be able to execute in the moment. Duncan Keith and Jonathan Taves and Joel Quenneville talked about it. You are going to have to somehow find that next level. Maybe it's a couple levels up in order to get yourself back into this series. But the first thing they have to do is win Game 5. Then you're back on serve. You're heading back home to the United Center, and we'll see what they can do from there.
What happens to Shaw here? Because whatever he said, we don't need to be lip readers. There's people that overheard it who are next to the penalty box and, you know, flipping the bird a couple of times going off the ice. I mean, he lost it.
Well, that's a good question. Now, you have to remember, this is a different situation. This is not a suspension that would be handed down or would be looked at by NHL player safety. That's run by a guy named Stefan Quintal. This is something that will be looked at by NHL's hockey operations. So my guess is the point man there is Colin Campbell. I don't know how this is going to work out. Just looking at past history, no one has been suspended in the past for something specific of which Shaw is being accused of at this point. There was something a few years ago where Wayne Simmonds, the Philadelphia Flyers, he apparently, or it was claimed that Sean Avery said that Wayne Simmonds said something very similar to him. The league did not find enough evidence that they could suspend him for that. However, the league in the past has suspended players for racial slurs in the past, so there is some precedent there for that. Just thinking back, there are a couple guys, Chris Bartsch, who played for the Florida Panthers, Craig Berube, I think at the time he was playing for the Washington Capitals. So I don't exactly know how this one's going to shake down, but I do know it will be different from a normal occurrence. Like when Duncan Keith got in trouble and got suspended for six games. The way this one is adjudicated will be a different process than something that Keith experienced.
And just so fans understand, this is not a team move that would be made. This is left to the league?
Well, I mean, I suppose it's within the team's province to be able to do it, but my guess is that this is something that the league would look at. Now, I have not seen any communiques from the league in any form or from hockey operations that they're examining what's going on in this process, but it will not come from NHL player safety. That's my understanding. This will come from NHL hockey operations. Colin Campbell's your guy.
Well, the reason I bring it up is because there are certainly precedent in all sports that if a team takes action, maybe a longer suspension is avoided. In other words, if Colin Campbell decided, well, it's two games, maybe it's not if the team steps in. Not that I'm advising the Blackhawks to do it. It's just curiosity.
I don't know, Steve. You know, I'll be honest. I don't know that I've seen this in the past from an individual National Hockey League team that's disciplined its own player in a situation like this. So,
okay.
My guess is this is going to come from the league if it comes at all.
And how fast would you hear? You'd hear before the game, I suppose, right?
I would think that's my guess, but...
We're kind of in uncharted waters here to some extent.
Well, let's just take a side issue in this one. Dennis Weidman took a while for his suspension to get handed down and then ultimately reappealed from the league. So NHL justice comes from hockey operations in the past, has been, I think the word in legal terms is capricious.
All right there, capricious. Well, let's just go ahead and get three more, starting with the first period tomorrow night. How about that?
That sounds good to me, but you're going to have to play a smarter, more urgent brand of hockey.
Thank you, Judd. Appreciate it.
See ya.
He's doing a great job with your Chicago Blackhawks, Judd Surratt, at Judd, or Judd. It could be Judd, but that being correct wouldn't help you. Like, if you typed in Judd, you're not going anywhere. At Judd _ Surratt. Does a great job.
Absolutely.
You know, it's the old cliche. Judd's forgotten more about hockey than any of us will ever know. At Judd _ Surratt. Jordan Goodman standing by. We're going to have a longer discussion with Jordan in just a few minutes, but how are the markets looking early?
Up a little bit. Nothing too fancy today, Steve, so far.
So far, so good. And we have fast food news coming up as well, including the great mystery of why Coke and Diet Coke taste better at McDonald's. Turns out that Sandberg was right. Details on that and a bunch of great texters as well. But, Jordan, we always tell people when you're on, get something we used to call a pen.
Yes,
and then
what
something
is that,
else actually? We used to call paper.
How about
a
quill? That's how quill would be good. Quill.
Yeah, grab yourself a quill. No, grab yourself something you can write with, or make sure your thumbs are functional, because Jordan's going to be able, during the course of the conversation, to give you several resources to help you with your money.
I hear the dust in your dashboard is actually quite helpful.
It is very helpful. You can invest in that. And we'll also tell you where you can put your money as opposed to where you have it now, which is your savings account, because every time you put money in a savings account, the bank goes, can you believe they're still doing this?
Well, you know, at least we're not in Japan or Germany where they literally have negative interest rates. So you actually get a minus 2% rate if you go to a Swiss or German bank. So we're better than that, if that helps, Steve.
Yeah, that's a good feeling.
Be happy with the 11 cents you get every month.
That's true.
Did you know you can't set the bar any lower than negative?
I know.
Like, you go, now we're actually...
You can go deeper into negative.
Yeah, we're like digging a hole to make the bar lower. More with Jordan Goodman coming up. It's moneyanswers.com. Matter of fact, you can email him at moneyanswers.com right now if you like.
I need a dollar, dollar, that's what I need.
Just ahead of more Jordan Goodman, McDonald's is testing the Grand Mac and the Mac Junior burgers in Columbus, Ohio. It's a giant Big Mac and a slightly smaller Big Mac. So you'd have a regular Big Mac, a Mac Junior, and a Grand Mac, trying to boost sales there. And I have good news about our new producer, Sandberg. Turns out she's not nuts.
No, she wasn't. We didn't think she
was. Well, this was part of Strawgate, hashtag All Straws Matter. Texters chimed in on whether or not it was the straw that made the McDonald's Diet Coke taste better, or the regular Coke, or any of the beverages.
Yeah.
847, the syrup is shipped in stainless steel containers. Other places get it in plastic. 815, Diet Coke's best at McDonald's, and it must be in a paper cup. It goes too fast and too flat and too fast in plastic. They do plastic at McDonald's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. It's not the straw. They use specific water...
You okay?
It's not the straw. They use specific water filtration systems, a blend designed for them, for syrup and carbonation. It's better because McDonald's uses reverse osmosis filters, 630. And 630, there was recently a story posted about why McDonald's drinks taste better. All McDonald's have their own triple filtering system for their water. All this is fine. But if you go to McDonald's official website and then you forward it to the guy picking on you, you will get this. Why does McDonald's Coca-Cola taste so good? There are many reasons Coca-Cola tastes so great at McDonald's. We follow the guidelines set. The water and the Coca-Cola syrup are pre-chilled before entering our fountain dispensers. Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. There's also our... I'm reading this verbatim. There's also our straw. It's slightly wider than a typical straw,
mm-hmm.
so that all that good Coke taste can hit your taste buds. Congratulations. Mm. Congratulations.
Yes.
Take a bow, Sleepy. You're a winner. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Someone said the food is saltier. That's why the
No, it's a straw. Better. It's right there. Right there in black, yeah. white, and red. By the way, I will never question your sanity again, no matter how much sleep you get.
Thank you
Until
very
the
much.
Next time you say something so BS crazy that I have to question your sanity.
Right.
But it turns out you're right.
I am right.
Yes, you are. So dance in it. It's 9:41. Jordan Goodman's here. Now that we've solved the problems of the world, Jordan, let's make a little money.
Yeah, I'm going to give you tenure at McDonald's University. Without
How about that? Yes. Sandberg giving me the Strawgate information. Turns out she's right. All right, so let's talk about how to save some money. I got a little money set aside. Maybe it's not a lot of money, but it's a little money. Or maybe I've got $25,000. Maybe I've got $50,000. I don't know how much I have. Where do I put it?
This is the time to be safe. It really is. With what's happening with oil prices, and today President Obama's in Saudi Arabia going on his knees saying, you know, oil prices, you know, crashing is going to be bad for everybody. What I've been doing with my money is what's called commercial real estate income funds. And there's a website. You know me, I've got a website for everything.
Yes,
commercialrealestateincomefund.com. That's a way of getting 8% super safely. Minimum is 18 months to put the money in. Minimum is $25,000. But no fees whatsoever. You can get your monthly checks if you need to live off the income, or you can reinvest them back in there. After 18 months, when they start selling the properties in the fund, you actually get a profit sharing of an additional 2%, roughly. So it's a widely diversified portfolio of new properties, renovating existing properties, and commercial properties. And
but you can actually make money as opposed to just having your money sit there.
Correct, 8%. And you get a little bit of gain starting 18 months from now. A lot of people, I talk to Gene listeners all the time, Steve, they got money. They're very scared of the stock market, which is very volatile. It plunged at the beginning of the year. Lately, it's been doing well. Bond yields about 1.7% on long-term treasuries. Cash, zero. CDs, money market funds.
Sure.
And it's going to stay that way. If not, as we talked about earlier, go negative.
Right.
So here's a nice, safe place. You don't have to worry about your principal at all, earning 8%. So again, the website for that, commercialrealestateincomefund.com. They've got a phone number, too, 888-444-2102. When I was with you in person last time, we talked about the just huge amount of people interested in getting a nice, safe 8% in this environment.
A lot of parents are trying to figure out and help their kids figure out school for the fall.
Yes.
At a time when the student loan bubble is about to go.
It already has. I mean, about 20% of student loans are now in default. And it's only going to get worse. Now, we're about to go into graduation season in a month or so. We're going to add about $100 billion in new student loan debt to the existing $1.3 trillion. At least you don't owe most of it, Steve. But it's a real burden on an awful lot of people.
Well, and if it were to go more quickly, right? I mean, 20% is bad enough. But let's say
it's a big number.
Yeah, suddenly if it's 40% or 60%, how does this compare to the housing crisis?
Oh, much bigger. Much bigger. Yeah, the housing crisis, you know, the people that defaulted were bad, but it was a relatively small. Most people pay their mortgages on time.
Right.
You know, like 3-4% went into foreclosure. This is much bigger, and the numbers are just enormous. And these are younger people who don't have income to pay these things back. So two specific suggestions. First of all, they can consolidate their student loans. There's a federal consolidation program. Difficult to figure out if you want to have somebody do it for you. ConsolidateCollege.com. That's a place called the Student Loan Help Center.
And that's a federal program?
That's a federal program, part of the Department of Education.
What about this SoFi thing you've talked about?
Okay, so that's the second thing. You can refinance your student loans. People don't seem to realize that. And it's a company called Social Finance, and their website is SoFi.com, S-O-F-I.com, /moneyanswers. They know it's me that way, and you get the best possible deal. Typically, about 2% interest rate. Your federal loans, private loans, combine all of them into one loan at roughly 2% rate if you have decent credit. and therefore you can get, you know, paid off much quicker instead of paying 5, 6, 10, whatever the higher rates are at 2%. So again, that's SoFi.com/moneyanswers. We've just solved is not the right word, lowered the burden of
their which is a big deal, because all this is stress reducing.
Yeah, because I'm hearing it all the time. I mean, like, if you go to the schools around there, like, what would Northwestern be? Like
55, 60 grand?
65, something like that, I mean, all these schools, there's 150 schools over $60,000 in tuition now.
And I'm being told Northwestern is 60 at the low end.
Yeah, well, that's if they don't feed you, I guess, or something. Yeah. Yes.
Right. All right, Jordan, on the flip side, my goddaughter's graduating from University of Iowa next month, and back in the day, I'd buy her bonds or, you know, something that, you know, will appreciate over time. What should I should, no more bonds, right? Should I start a mutual fund?
Well, you get fund? Very low yield. You get very, very low yield on bonds, you know, 1.5%, something like that.
She get her some from the as seen on TV aisle at Walgreens.
No, what's something good monetary that I could kind of set up for her? So
this is something you're saying, she's just graduating, right?
Yeah.
So she's young and she's got her whole life ahead of her. I mean, go for something that's got growth. A simple thing you could do would be an S&P 500 index fund, which in the long run beats most other future funds with very, very low fees. Vanguard, Fidelity, T. Rowe Price. You could even buy a stock on the exchange, which is SPY, which is an exchange-traded fund, which is the S&P 500 index. So that's a good place to start.
Do you like the SPY?
I do. If you want it. I mean, that's a simple way
of doing it. It's a buy and hold forever, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Well, you can sell it any time, but yes.
But, I mean for to get, you know, some maximum growth out of it.
In other words, that's like, whatever, $50 a share or something. Yeah. To go into a Vanguard or a Fidelity fund might be $1,000 or something. So I'm saying you could even put in smaller amounts of money.
It's a great idea.
And then just keep putting it in on a regular basis, darling. You know,
okay,
like
just
keep adding. It's not a one-time event at graduation, then she never sees it again. You know, her $25 might go to 27 or something.
Right, exactly, yeah.
You got to put in a little bit more than
thanks
that.
Thanks a lot. I could have had, you know, the Apple Watch.
Speaking of kids get bombarded, especially in college, with credit card offers.
Oh, yeah.
Free credit card offers. Oh, hey, it's going to be great. Just sign up, credit card for free. They forgot that part where you got to pay it back.
Is that right? I didn't think so. I thought everything is free.
Nah,
Bernie Sanders says everything is free. So
turns out Bernie's not right, and the plastic doesn't mean it's free. But you have another piece of education here. Andre, I don't know how many people know this. You don't have to have a credit card in the state of Illinois.
Correct.
You can have a credit card in the state of Arkansas.
That's the lowest in the country.
And why is Arkansas's usury rate so good? Just because they
set up in the 1930s, they cannot charge more than 5% over the prime rate. The prime rate today is 3.5, so they can't charge more than 8.5. And most of them are like 6%, 7%, 8%. A free website to find out the best deals is creditcardperks, PERKS.com. Depending on your needs, get a card that's appropriate for your specific situation. So if you want to do airline miles, you know, concentrate all your spending on one particular airline that, you know, you want to get frequent flyer
points. But use the miles.
Use the miles because they expire. That's correct. If you want to get a GM card, get a GM, you know, points. If you want to go to Disney World, what would be the best thing that you would want, Steve? What do you want
hair.
The most reward?
Yeah, hair. If there's
hair.
A credit card, there's a credit card that has hair perks. Okay. I'm in.
It's not a magic credit card.
It's not. Oh, that sucks. Credit card perks.
Maybe we could put you in the musical hair. That would be
yes.
Close.
I could be part of a song called The Bald Guy. Creditcardperks.com. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. I want to ask you some housing stuff, too, before we go. Again, it's moneyanswers.com. It's Jordan Goodman, and we're back after this.
What's something that you always carry with you?
Hot sauce.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you getting information right now? Hot sauce. Hot sauce in my bag, Swag?
Hot sauce.
Really?
Yes.
Now, listen, I just want you to know, people are going to see this and say, okay, she's pandering to black people.
Okay. Is it working?
Yeah. Yes, if you're wondering how Hillary Clinton won the New York primary, hot sauce. Hillary Clinton following the President Obama playbook, only doing the hard-hitting interviews. Jordan Goodman. MoneyAnswers.com. All right, Jordan, let's talk about houses now. Let's talk about refi. Let's talk about FI. What are we looking at?
Well, the mortgage rates have gone down dramatically here. They're almost at the lowest level in history right now. You can get a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage at about 3.5%. I mean, just unbelievable how low they've gone.
Right.
And the 15-year is like 2.5%. So if your current mortgage is, I would say, 4.5% or higher, it's certainly worth taking a look into refinancing. a website to do that would be youcanrefi.com, youcanrefi.com. They've got what's called the ARC loan, which is the one I've always had, where the rate, the automatic rate cut mortgage, if rates fall, it goes down. If rates go up, it does not go up. So, who could think rates could go this low? But take them while they've got them, because we have deficits, we get all kinds of problems, and the rates could go up at any time.
They're selling like hotcakes. And then we get this question all the time, can I refi my car loan?
Absolutely. So there's a place called MyLoanGen.com, MyLoanGen.com, and in about 30 seconds, you can refinance your car loan. You put in.
He's not kidding, by the way. You can literally get on and do this in less than a minute.
Correct. So you put in your current loan, how many more months you have to go, your current payment, current interest rate, and then you go to it and say, and then there's a little dial that you move as to what you want your payment to be. So what you're doing is extending your loan out for more years in order to get a lower payment. I mean, you are going to pay more interest in the long run, but meanwhile, you avoid the hook man, right? Steve and I are going to go in, darling. Steve and I are going to go into a really growth business here, which is the hook, the repo guys.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, because if I show up with Jordan to repo your car, you're never going to think we're going to do it. That's like a couple of self-respecting, decent guys. Come on, please.
That's right. That's a real growth business, because a lot of people bought cars. Last year, we sold 18 million cars. A lot of that with subprime loans, okay, which is nice, except they can't afford it.
As far as your outlook financially goes for the days ahead or even the next week, you know, it's starting to be like forecasting the weather. You can only go for 48 or 72 hours when it comes to money.
It depends on oil. Okay?
Right.
And we had a major change in the oil market on Sunday when the meeting in Doha broke up, basically. And the reason
without any solution,
the Iranians didn't show up. And everybody said, we're willing to freeze production if the Iranians will. And the Iranians said, forget it. We've been at an embargo for 30 years. This is our chance to shine. So they've gone from 500,000 barrels a day up to about 3.5 million barrels. They want to go up to like 5 million barrels. And that's just that supply is going to weigh on the market. So the whole meeting, which they thought they were going to have an agreement on, broke up. Oil fell immediately. I think oil is going to go down further, because it's just a massive oversupply. Here's another growth business to go into, Steve. We should do this together. Tankers that just hold oil off of ports.
I don't have one. I don't have a tanker. Well, I'd like a tanker.
You should have a tanker, because you just sit there and earn money.
I could name it Bodie McBoatface.
I like that.
Yeah.
But there's literally no place to store oil anymore. There's such an oversupply around the world. So I think oil prices, which went up to about $40, $41, based on the anticipation there was going to be a deal, when that fell apart, oil's back into the 30s. I think it's going to go lower. And that means the stock market goes down. Oil and stocks move very much together these days.
You do anything in tech, or is it too bump and grind?
Oh, I do a lot in tech.
So what do you like in tech?
I would say Google is certainly going to be... Google and Facebook are just taking over the world, basically.
Right, right.
All the advertising used to go, frankly, to traditional media, like newspapers, TV, magazines, and all that.
Right. If you look at Google or Facebook, because I got in at Facebook early, which was a little bit of luck.
Another of your great moves.
It was a great move. Yeah, listen to Jordan Goodman at MoneyAnswers.com. But it would seem to me that the assorted vendors, suppliers, even though Google is largely in-house, there are still people that supply, in quotes, supply Google and Facebook with ideas and products and various things. And it would seem like those are the people you'd want to align yourself with as well. True or not true?
Well, some kinds.
I mean, I look at like Instant Messenger for Facebook. It's huge now. It's
huge. They just buy them is what happens. Okay, like Facebook bought Oculus, right?
Right, so why don't I get it with a... I need to get with a company that Facebook's about to buy. Could you send me the list today?
Well, Oculus was a good one. They buy things all the time, yes. I'm just saying, if you want a long-term thing, just those would be two that are going to do really well long-term. They're just taking over the world, basically.
It is MoneyAnswers.com along with the return of the emails, which this is the only guest that ever guarantees you he'll do it, and he will.
And I call them, too. I'm crazy.
Show up at your house. balance your checkbook. But along with that, he also has a tremendous selection of resources at MoneyAnswers.com, including all the books. I mean, frankly, if you read the books, you're going to be way better off as well. So nice to talk to you as always,
Very
Jordan.
Good. All right. Thanks so much, Steve. Appreciate it. Thank you, Andrea.
See you, Jordan.
Jordan Goodman. MoneyAnswers.com. Couple of minutes before Bill and Wendy, they're next.